Generous support from the University of Southern Maine. USM educates Maine's future artists, business people, engineers, healthcare professionals, lawyers, managers, public servants, scientists, and teachers. More information is available at usm.maine.edu. The views expressed on Blunt are those of individual producers, not those of WMPG, the University of Southern Maine, or any of Blunt's funders and supporters. Blunt Youth Radio welcomes opposing views. Okay, play, intro. What is she saying? It's on, so. It's not doing anything.
What?
Cut. She thinks, I don't know why she thinks.
It should be on.
Hold on.
It has to start somewhere. It has to start sometime. What better place than here? What better time than now?
What's your contribution going to be? What problems are you going to solve? What discoveries will you make?
I intend to broadcast from this ship 24 hours a day until the day I die. And then for a couple days after that.
No one's written your destiny for you. You make your own future.
I've always lived for news and weather. Happy to die for them too. Especially the weather.
Welcome to the award-winning youth-run Blunt Youth Radio Project, and tonight we're discussing the undiscussed issues within mainstream LGBTQIA+ activism, what local Maine programs are doing for LGBTQ youth, and what issues need to be addressed for each initial in the initialism. I'm Olivia Bradstreet.
And I'm Iris Sangiovanni. Speaking of initialism, let's spell out what LGBTQIA stands for.
LGBTQIA, lesbian, gay, and or genderqueer, bisexual, and or bigender, transgender, and or transsexual, queer, and or questioning, intersex, asexual, and or agender. I'd like to also throw in there that bisexual can sometimes also stand for many different non-monosexual identities, like pansexual.
And tonight we're joined by two in-studio guests, and we'd also like to remind our listeners that this is a call-in show. Our number is 780-4909.
That's 780-4909.
So please call throughout the show if you have a question or comment. We'd love to hear from you.
So welcome to the show. With us, we have Sarah Osgood, the new program coordinator for Portland Outright, a longtime volunteer for the LGBTQ community. She'll be speaking with us tonight on Maine LGBTQ youth and what affects queer youth space, and queer youth spaces. Sarah Osgood is joining us tonight in studio.
And also joining us in studio, we have Megan Brody, the assistant professor of theater with women and gender studies at USM. She teaches theater and drama dealing with topics on sexual orientation and gender identity. She teaches Butches, Bitches, and Buggers, excuse me, and exploration of contemporary queer drama at USM on
the reclamation of the word queer.
So thank you both.
Thank you for having us. So to just really get started, let's start with Sarah. Can we give us, please, some more information about what Portland Outright is?
Yeah, so Portland Outright, as it stands now, is kind of a reincarnation of an old program. Outright has existed in Portland for a really long time, and there are incarnations of Outright across the country. Most previously, it was PRISM, the Proud Rainbow Youth of Southern Maine, located at Community Counseling Center. And we've been in a transition period this spring and are now struck out on our own. We're partnered with Youth Move right now, which we're really excited about, and are trying to kind of reinstate our program because we think it's really, really important and that there is a need for space for LGBTQ youth.
So how did it start? Where did it come from to make a space? There's clearly a need for a space for youth. And how was that started?
Well, in the transition period, we lost our funding and our home space. So a bunch mm-hmm. of community volunteers and organizers all came together this spring because of how important we think this program is, and decided that we all needed to just band together to save the program. And, you know, there are a lot of young folks accessing a lot of different types of resources in this community, mm-hmm. But there aren't very many specifically for LGBTQ mm-hmm. youth. And the main program that we offer is a drop-in space on Wednesday nights that is going to be reinstated on October 16th from mm-hmm. 6 to 8 p.m. Over on Lancaster Street at the Youth Move offices. And what that is essentially just a space for young folks who maybe don't have a place where they're listened to, a place where they're told that they're amazing and brilliant mm-hmm. and, like, can feel really empowered mm-hmm. to be exactly who they are in that space. And I think that that is so important, and that is at the heart of our work, is offering young folks a space to be and to be in their identities, mm-hmm. exactly how they want to be, but also to be creating a space where young folks are being brought to the forefront of the LGBTQ movement.
Mm-hmm. Which I think is deeply needed, mm-hmm. personally. And Megan, can you tell us a little bit more about your involvement with the LGBT community and what you do?
My involvement actually functions maybe on two different levels. Mm-hmm. I teach classes at USM, and I think it's really important, especially for those transitioning from high school into college, to understand that there's a shared vocabulary, to understand that there's a shared history, whether you happen to identify as queer or LGBTQI plus, right, A plus, or whether you're an ally, mm-hmm. for there to be a space where that can be discussed safely, in terms of both the arts and history. But on a more sort of grassroots practical level, I also work sometimes with Adverb Productions out of the mm-hmm. University of New England, and helped them compile their first anthology, which was Out and Allied, pieces written by young people. And I helped cultivate some of the pieces among USM students. And I think they're working on a second volume now, actually. But I think that that type of volume is super important because mm-hmm. it empowers young people to write about their own experiences, and then they have the opportunity to see them performed and see sort of the ripple effects that their words have on not only educating others, but mm-hmm. inspiring them too. So I work in the academic realm, but also in a much more personal way with community members to try to raise awareness.
Now, I was actually reading part, you know, I was starting that first anthology today. And I was wondering, you know, how are youth, like, where are they getting involved in this? Like, how do they find out? How do they join up or whatever?
We love for more people to join up. So I helped coordinate at USM, but I know that Kathy Plord, who is the artistic director at Adverb over at UNE, also puts out calls and was trying to get folks across the nation mm-hmm. in Canada, and it's hard. It really requires sort of bodies mm-hmm. on the ground, which is why I think resource centers and places where folks can gather is so important to get out messages, but also to say, hey, there are lots of opportunities for you to express yourself artistically in this space and maybe in a more public way if you're comfortable with that. Mm-hmm. And the great thing about those sorts of anthologies is that you can also publish anonymously if it's something that you're not ready to put your name on, but it's something that you want to put out there, you want to share with others. And I think that idea of anonymity, especially for young people, sometimes can be important. Mm-hmm. We can't rush people to self-identify, and maybe they won't ever, mm-hmm. but maybe they have something to offer as part of a bigger conversation.
So we're hearing about the younger youth and then the older youth this evening. That's wonderful. So we've been talking a bit about youth empowerment and what they can, you know, what queer youth can put out there to talk about queer identities. And we actually have a piece that's talking about people who are either queer or not queer, talking about these issues in a way that's problematic, by our Blunt member, Adam Bradstreet, who will be examining in his piece popular songs like Same Love and Born This Way. So we'd like to hear that.
Music has always played a part in social change. But what about more recently? Same Love and Born This Way, two songs about the LGBT plus community, have been a huge success. But are they truly supportive of the LGBTQIA plus people or not? Macklemore, the artist who made Same Love, has been criticized for his song on equal marriage by members of the LGBT plus community, to which he does not belong. As a straight man, he has been criticized for speaking for the community. The title in itself promotes the idea that heterosexual identities are the default human sexual identity, and that the heterosexual relationships are real love. The whole song tries to justify queer identities by drawing comparison to heterosexual identities, i.e., the default. The song also assumes that the listener needs to have queer identities justified for them, because the listener is assumed to be an unallied, cisgender, straight person. Many people call themselves allies of the LGBT plus community and believe that the A in LGBTQIA plus stands for ally. This is not true. The A in LGBT plus refers to asexual or agender, which means a person who identifies with the lack of sexual attraction and or gender identity. A does not stand for ally and never has. Allies are people who support a community they are not part of. While allies can help a movement, they should not be the spokesperson for the movement. Their support can be helpful, but they cannot truly represent the affected groups. Lady Gaga's Born This Way, a song that many people refer to as the gay anthem, suffers from some of the same issues that Same Love does. Although Lady Gaga herself identifies as bisexual, Born This Way fails to properly represent the LGBT plus community. One of the problems is that she says, "Don't be a drag, just be a queen," which is very critical of the drag queen community. While trying to be inclusive of many different races and ethnicities, she actually uses two racist terms. Cola and Oriental are two racist names, and are very demeaning. In a well-written piece on Tumblr about Born This Way, they talk about the subject. Oriental is a word referring to anything Eastern. Note that I said anything. Calling someone Oriental is dehumanizing, because you are basically saying that they are akin to Oriental rugs and other Eastern merchandise. Cola and Colo originated in describing people of Hispanic and Native American descent. After a couple hundred years, some white Americans used Colo interchangeably with people of Hispanic descent as a derogatory term. But more recently, Colo and Cola is often used to refer to Latino people in gangs and drug culture who wear certain types of gang attire and prescribe to certain types of gang behavior. So, when Gaga says Cola descent, that is basically what she is unknowingly referring to. Not a very appropriate way to give a shout out to Latino people, is it? These problematic elements within these songs, if accidentally, showcase the greater mainstream LGBT plus activism issues. Racism, lack of non-monosexual inclusivity, and the lack of representation and inclusivity of trans and gender nonconforming identities. These issues can only be solved by actual members of the LGBT plus community, to members within their community, and by allies listening to them, and knowing their place or not in the movement. This is Adam Bradstreet reporting from Blunt Youth Radio.
All right, thank you, Adam, for the piece. If you're tuning in, I'm Iris San Giovanni.
And I'm Olivia Bradstreet.
And we are talking about
LGBT plus community issues and mainstream activism issues tonight here on Blunt Youth Radio. And our number, this is a call-in show, folks. Our number is 780-4909. That's 780-4909. And we would love to hear from you.
Yeah, I mean, do you feel that Adam's points were correct? Do you agree? Do you disagree? Let us know. 780-4909.
So with us, we have Sarah Osgood and Megan Brody. And Sarah, it seems like you had a lot on your mind during that piece. Is there anything specific you would like to share with us?
Oh, I thought the piece was really, really well done and spoke really articulately about a lot of things that I have thought a lot about. I think just kind of this idea sometimes in LGBTQ organizing, I guess I have this feeling sometimes that the movement makes me give up some of the other issues that I really, really care about. Like, I don't feel like I should have to sacrifice the battles for equality of age, to fight against ageism, to fight against mm-hmm. racism in order to do queer organizing. And I really believe in intersectionality, like the mm-hmm. idea that all of these movements are really, really interconnected. And I think that piece was just so well done.
Mm-hmm. And do you have any thoughts on what Sarah just said, Megan?
Oh, I agree with Sarah completely. I think that often when I teach these issues, we look at the civil rights movement and we mm-hmm. look at how much overlap there is between that and contemporary queer rights movements. I think that the best way sometimes to approach it is to be aware of what's happening and to be critical about the manner in which popular culture depicts different queer identities. But at the same time, to understand that sometimes people think that they're being allies and think that they're helping in a way that perhaps they don't wholly understand. And so I appreciate that sort of activism on the part of allies. And I think that the best thing in those circumstances is to educate and to expand sort of the group of allies instead of excluding them. And sometimes allies end up being queer folks too, you know. Some people are allied for a time, and then inevitably those who are speaking on behalf of a cause are doing it because it is something that they're passionate about. But even I in class find myself saying something where, like, well, that was the term we used in 1996 when I was in college. No, that's not the right term to use now. Duh. Right? But those are the moments where I go, hey, look, this happens. This is a safe space for you to say to me as a teacher, is it okay for me to use the word queer if I'm not queer? Is it still a bad word?
We'll be talking, discussing
stuff like that, so that education is something that we strive to do to empower people without necessarily shutting them down.
Yeah, and I think there's a difference probably between being in a class and then being a popular music artist, sort of spreading your word around and being congratulated for being so awesome, especially in the Macklemore case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and well, yeah. Like speaking of like Macklemore, I agree what, Adam was saying, but also, is it necessarily bad? Macklemore reached out to people that necessarily maybe wouldn't have gotten to hear that kind of message. So it's I don't know.
I think the thing, at least, that bothers me is that I am aware that all the correct information is out there. You simply have to do a couple Google searches and actually, read people's experiences and take those in. So it, especially with the internet and the fact that people share so much, you don't have to do anything wrong anymore. There is no excuse for not having the correct knowledge, especially like with the Macklemore and Ryan Lewis song, Same Love. They both, make it very clear on national television that they're straight. So do a little more research. But, any thoughts on our points? Yes.
Well, it just makes me think a lot about sort of the pop culture moments that have come out of a lot of attention being brought to bullying mm-hmm. of LGBTQ youth. And I often have this feeling of discomfort where I'm excited that there is attention and that there is media that is addressing mm-hmm. these things, but I also feel very strangely about queer youth being treated as a market. And so, I feel like that's the reality of this media for me, is that mm-hmm. people are being paid lots of money to make songs about the struggles of LGBTQ youth and their struggles. And I think a lot about my place in the movement and working directly with LGBTQ youth and how it's not my job to speak for them ever, mm-hmm. and instead it's my job to create safe and accountable spaces for folks who are experts on their own experience to be doing amazing things. I think that LGBTQ youth are fierce and brilliant and amazing and, don't need me to, tell the world that they're great. I need to be creating spaces for them to use their own voices.
Which I think, is a whole point mm-hmm. on allyship in itself, where mm-hmm. I think a huge part about being an ally is simply taking your space in the world with, you know, your privileges that you have and using your space with that to advocate, you know, and you tell the messages that the people, underprivileged people or minorities, want you to say. Like, don't make it about you, which is what the whole Same Love song is about, him. But anyway, that song really bothers me, in case anyone was wondering. But the other thing is, I mean, I would define ally as somebody who's simply just, you know, they're supporting a group they're not part of. But I know some people say that you are, if you're in the queer community, then you're not an ally, you're just in the community. I don't know if you each draw a line on that, because that's actually something I'm wondering. Like, some people will say they don't count as an ally. Like, only allies are people who are cis or straight.
That's a very good question. I don't know. You know, I've never really thought about it in that way, because I think that the term ally is so broad that sometimes you might be an ally, you know, for perhaps a gay sibling, or you might be an ally for someone who's trans, and, mm-hmm. and you think of your own allyship in a different way, or that you think that you're allies to multiple communities.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think in some ways it's deeply personal, and yeah. almost sometimes on an individual, sort of on a case-by-case scenario. I know that doesn't really answer your question all that much, but I think that that's a tough one. And I think, I realize the song frustrates you to no end, but I what I love about your frustration and how vocal you are about it is that you touch on something that I think is really important for queer young people and adults, and that is a hunger to see themselves represented in some way in popular culture, and that sticky space where I want to feel that stuff resonates with me, and yet who's producing that stuff that they so want to see, so that they want, you know, queer material out there, whether it be songs or movies. That one's a touchy one. But I had a student
what?
I had a student recently come out and
how
go,
do you mean?
Well, who wanted to know really great lesbian movies she could go watch.
Oh.
And I went, oh, that one's going to be tough. So I'm going to give you two lists. I'm going to give you the list of sort of literary, definitely passable cinema. And then I'm going to give you the list of, oh, you're probably going to want to watch this, but not because it's great cinema. And it's hard because it's so limiting. But people will, you know, students will say, you know, I've watched every, whether it be gay or lesbian movie that has ever been made that's available on Netflix. And you're like, wow, oh, I know that a lot of them really aren't that good, but we have to make more. There has to be more popular culture that resonates with young people and adults, but part of the problem is who makes it? So that, is it someone appropriating someone else's identity in a way that's really offensive, or is it made by queer people who, and then
it,
how commercial
gets
is
tricky
it?
Then, because you like the song Born This Way by Lady Gaga, she herself, you know, she says she identifies as bisexual, so she's bisexual, but so she's technically part of the
right.
queer community, but there's issues with her song that she
right.
you know, has been called, you know, the gay anthem, all the things that Adam said,
right?
You know, that there's racism in them. And I think, you know, that piece really articulates some of the issues within the actual LGBTQ plus activism, is that there's all this promotion of cis white gay guys getting married and how great that's going to be for everyone. And that song, you know, her song alienates, you know, just people of color. It's not even just bisexuality. It's like alienating of just people by, you know, their ethnicity or race. And we have a couple pieces, you know, we have a piece about bullying, and we have a piece about
That's true. We do have a piece about
the HRC and these issues mm-hmm. too, but we also have 6 minutes until break.
Yes,
so I'm not sure I want to play those yet.
we'll get to those.
Megan, I was just kind of curious, like, what kind of sort of a dynamic are your classes? Like, you know, like, what, you know, what are the students like, and what kind of discussions arise?
Butches, Bitches, and Buggers is my favorite class. Sorry to anyone listening who's in all of my
classes.
And I'm
sorry I butchered the title.
No, that's okay. That's okay. Trust me, there are days when I'm thinking it's Boogers. But it's Buggers. You know what? It attracts students from a wide range of majors at different points in their academic careers. Folks who don't identify as queer in any way, some who identify as allied, some who just need to knock out a diversity component at USM. But it's one of the most thoughtful classes that I have. I run it like a seminar so that it's a safe space for everyone to speak, everybody to ask questions. And we use the plays as a point of departure for discussing queer history, but also language on a really fundamental level, because I find that that's what makes people the most uncomfortable, is they don't know what's okay, and they have a really sincere desire to be respectful. They don't know how to do it, and they're afraid to ask because they don't want to be rude in asking someone. And so it's a space where we talk a lot about language and what's okay, and how do you ask someone a sensitive question about his or her sexuality, sex, gender, and when is it just not appropriate to ask?
And, well, like, personally speaking, like, I've sort of, as far as, like, you know, asking someone about their pronouns, like, it's something that, you know, I'm really trying very hard to practice, because, yeah, it's like I just have been always hit with this awful, like, oh no, like I'm assuming things, like that's so terrible of me. So, like, that's one thing that I'm trying to work on. But like, yeah,
it's really hard. And I think at the end of the day, it's sort of, it's great when you can function in a somewhat safe community and realize that we're all compassionate. And so, if you kind of mess up, someone will gently correct you and you will know moving forward. And that's sort of how it works in a classroom space, but it's a lot scarier when you're not in a classroom space or in a professional environment.
I mean, I know I've even been in a space that's not exactly like a classroom, but it was a discussion, which was supposed to be, you know, a safe, comfortable space. And some people started saying these really biphobic things, and, you know, as a person who recognized that biphobia, I, you know, went, this is uncomfortable, this is offensive, and it was ignored by people who predominantly identify as some form of queer. So that was like, you know, I just think that these discussions need to happen also just more within the queer community, is questioning your own privilege, checking your privilege, and then also not recognizing just, that you don't have certain privileges.
Yeah, and
just,
I think,
dealing with all those things, and we'll also be having a piece coming up that's going to be talking a little bit about that.
Yeah, but like, one of the things is, like, what do you do if you have this privilege? Like, you know, like, because, I mean, I think it's easy to sort of feel, like, almost, like, embarrassed or, like, you know, depressed, like, like, I'm so, like, what do I do with, yeah, not to say it like that, I mean,
no,
but, like,
that's really sincere. I think that's a really sincere appraisal of how some people feel, like, how do I help in a respectful way, and when should I just back off?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, in listening to y'all talk, it makes me think about, the way that our community maybe needs to be holding itself accountable. Mm-hmm. And I liked what you were saying, Iris, about, like, trying to challenge yourself to, like, implement different mm-hmm. things in your life, and that accountability and allyship is a lifetime process. Like, learning about one's privilege and how to be an ally to different communities that are not your own is something that you have to work on every single day. Somebody that I worked with once told me that she felt like her job as a white anti-racist person in the fight against racism in this country mm-hmm. was not to lift up people of color, but was to instead work within the white community to hold back the tides of racism mm-hmm. And white supremacy. And so, like, it's not our job to tell other people how to do things better. It's our job to do self-reflection and work within our own communities to try and be better and be better allies every single day.
Yeah, I mean, like, I agree with the, you know, the white privilege thing. I know as a person with white privilege, I try to actively, you know, I've been raised, you know, in a white supremacist society, so I try to actively not help uphold the privileges my skin gives me. And I think, actually, I think it's problematic to draw comparisons between race issues and sexual identity issues, even though everything is intersectional. But I think that's something that people with straight privilege or cis privilege or both really need to question or work on too. But we're actually heading to our break.
But stay tuned.
We're talking. This is Iris and Olivia. We're talking about LGBTQ plus issues on WMPG. This is Blunt Youth Radio. And now it's break.
Whenever I'm alone with you, you make me feel like I am home again. Whenever I'm alone with you, you make me feel like I am whole again. Thank you.
Welcome back. You're listening to Blunt Youth Radio Project. Tonight we're discussing LGBTQ plus issues. I'm Olivia Bradstreet.
And I'm Iris San Giovanni.
We are with our guests, Sarah Osgood and Megan Brody, in studio with us. Sarah is from the program coordinator for Portland Outright, and Megan Brody is assistant professor of theater with women and gender studies at USM. We'd like to remind our listeners that the number is 780-4909. That's 780-4909. This is a call-in show, and we'd love to hear your thoughts on these issues. All right.
And I think we're going to start off the second half of the show with a piece done by Blunt member Gabby Farrell, and her feature looks at the problems with the human rights campaign and the issues with focusing on the majority of the LGBTQ plus activism on equal marriage. So without further ado, we're going to listen to that.
You probably remember in June when the U.S. Supreme Court was about to make their decisions on the Defense of Marriage Act and Proposition 8. Many of your Facebook friends changed their profile pictures to a red equal sign. The picture was a play on the symbol of the human rights campaign, usually a blue and yellow equal sign. Though the sentiment and support for marriage equality is great, many people have taken issue with the human rights campaign because they put all the focus on same-sex marriage and have chosen to avoid trans rights at all costs. People say, what about bisexual rights, trans rights, asexual rights, the rights of queer people of color? The big gay social issue that gets most of the media attention is gay marriage. While this is important, it's not the only or most important issue of equality that needs to be addressed. Some people say they fear that after marriage equality is universal, which is now inevitable, the middle-class white, gay, cisgendered men and women will stop their advocacy and stop helping to finance the movement. One article said it's their last step to finally becoming, quote, normal and having all the rights straight people do. The emphasis on white gays and lesbians and erasure of other gender and sexual minorities is very apparent in their representation in the media. Glee, Modern Family, and The New Normal are praised for their progressive gay characters, when in reality they are perpetuating the stereotype that the LGBT community is mostly very flamboyant, middle-class white men who go shopping and give sassy advice to their girlfriends. Portrayals of bi or trans or asexual people in television are few and far between, and when they do show up, they are written and presented very poorly. Trans people are played by cisgendered actors, bisexual characters later realize that they're actually gay or that it was just a phase. And don't get me wrong, I love the gay uncles, Mitch and Cam on Modern Family, but when they are the only queer people represented in media, the only queer social issues that are adequately addressed are those that affect them, mainly marriage. This is Gabby Farrell reporting for Blunt Youth Radio.
Again, this is Blunt Youth Radio. We're discussing LGBTQ plus issues. I'm Olivia Bradstreet.
And I'm Iris San Giovanni. Don't forget to call in with your questions or comments. The number is 780-4909. Again, 780-4909.
And we just listened to a piece by Blunt member Gabby Farrell on the issues with the human rights campaign and mainstream LGBT representation, or the lack thereof. So that was talking about the, you know, the focus on marriage equality, and, you know, marriage equality is something that we've fairly recently finally achieved in Maine, and that's something that I know quite a few organizations are working to preserve. And we're wondering, what are your thoughts, Megan, on the focus on marriage equality? Is it good? Is it bad?
I don't think it's necessarily good or bad. I think I was reading an interesting article about Edie Windsor in The New Yorker. And somewhere in that article, I remember they were talking about the fact that some people within the queer community thought, you know, this is not something we necessarily need to pursue. There are alternatives. We don't need to be so much like mainstream society. And someone else responded, you know, it's not so much wanting to be like mainstream society as it is you should have access to the same rights as other people, and whether or not you choose to take advantage of them is your own personal choice, but to be denied them outright is part of the problem. So I think that the marriage movement is certainly an important one. It's one that I personally support, although
though I could be married in Maine to my partner, we're not, and we're totally fine with that. We've been together for like 10 years. But I also am super grateful for those of my friends and colleagues who were very much waiting for that, and it was important to them. But, you know, the flip side of that is it doesn't make me forget about the fact that we need more gender-neutral bathrooms, that we have trans issues on a daily basis, whether I am in a department store or I'm on campus, and that there are day-to-day struggles that affect large minority populations that need to be addressed and in an equally timely way because they're being denied super basic rights and put in positions where not only is it socially awkward, but their lives could be in jeopardy. And so I think that marriage is sort of a step in a much bigger, more inclusive battle that includes many different queer identities. And I think that there's a long way to go. And so I think that, yay, for this one step, but I'm committed to a much bigger project. What about you?
I think it's been hard for me from where I stand in the work that I do to, like, obviously I'm excited when important things happen in the queer community and, like, we are winning ground in certain movements, and I'm not going to be upset about that. What is hard for me is the different groups of people represent such a large part of the community who are not directly benefiting from marriage equality. I think about, you know, low-income folks, rural folks, queer elders, and young folks in the queer community who have been kind of told to wait for their battles until marriage equality has been passed. And I know that at least in the state of Maine, there are a number of queer youth organizations that have lost their funding this year while the battle for marriage equality has been fought. And I just feel, you know, like, it's hard for me to get behind it when so many other people are struggling and some people are benefiting, but not everyone. And so, you know, it's just hard to feel like the priority doesn't affect me and doesn't affect the communities that I think are so important and I'm fighting to support.
Yeah, I mean, I personally, you know, I agree with all of the points stated here. I think that marriage equality is a great step. I think it's, you know, something that is important. But I it's sad to see that a lot of, you know, it was really interesting, I think, in Maine to see a lot of discussion around these issues. And I don't know, I feel like I personally have seen the discussion dissipate a bit since last year. But I think it's growing again, especially with all, you know, like the Outright program, and I think these programs are sort of, you know, coming up and going, we need to solve this issue now. But Iris, you seem to have thoughts on this.
Well, I mean, I would agree with Megan. Like, I think it is a step. Like, I think, I don't know, from my experiences at least, like, I feel like, because I did a little bit of work with the Mainers United for marriage equality.
Me too.
And by doing that, I mean, I talked to people, and that sort of, I think, like, it brought attention to, but, I mean, it kind of started a discussion, but as you were saying, Olivia, like, I think the discussion needs to continue and needs to broaden to include everyone.
Yeah, and I know, you know, there is a mentality, I think, a bit in Maine that, you know, to each their own, and that's why quite a few people, I think, actually just, you know, went, okay, fine, if these people in their own house want to do this thing, you know, then I'll vote for that, that's fine, you know, the sort of conservative liberal. But, you know, there are rural Mainers that are queer, there are old Mainers that are queer, there are young Mainers that are rural and living with old people that are queer. So, you know, all these things need to be discussed, and these people need outreach.
You know, like Modern Family and Glee and, you know, just, we were talking about this before with, you know, the pop songs, but like how media sort of portrays, you know, those in the queer community, like, it's
problematic at best,
but it's like also, I mean, I don't know, like, Like, Sarah, with your work, with, you're dealing with youth, like, how has, have you seen that impact them at all? And, like, what are their, I don't know.
Can you speak for their thoughts on the, speak for the youth. But do you, you know, have an idea in the mainstream media how that affects or does not affect them?
I can speak kind of broadly. I mean, I think it affects everybody a little bit differently. Youth-aged folks that I work with sometimes are really excited by seeing different representations of their identities in the media, and that's really important and awesome. I mean, I also work with a number of young folks who are like, I don't see myself there. I don't see my families. I don't see my community. I don't feel like these people represent me or are benefiting me. And I think there is something to be said about having a lot, you know, having more and more LGBTQ people portrayed in pop culture and in the media, and that's really important to just have it out there, because if it's reaching somebody, then it's doing something. But it is sometimes a letdown to see these people who don't really represent us or the people in our lives, and, you know, would love to see some more, like, accountable representations of queer people, more queer artists being elevated up. There are so many, like, you know, queer musicians, queer actors who could be playing, like, queer roles instead of having, like, straight folks play queer people on TV. You know, there's, I think there's, you know, it's that baby step mentality, but there's just, like, so much more that could be out there.
Yeah. You know? And I mean, I know that's really problematic, you know, with a lot of the mainstream so-called representation is that there's already all these people out there doing this thing. Like, the idea that I'm going to talk about Macklemore again. That Macklemore is, you know, the first guy to talk about, you know, the homosexuals publicly. And that's so, you know, it's racist for him to actually say that. And then it's just so wrong because there's so many queer people of color.
Well, the interesting thing
of rap and hip hop that have been telling these stories and talking about their own experience this whole time.
To go to the song Same Love again, you know, you love that, Olivia. but no, I mean, Mary Lambert, she sings the chorus in that. And, she's, you know, a singer in, you know, the queer community. It's like, but yet the focus goes to Macklemore and Ryan Lewis, and it's like,
And we're going to, you know, talk about how representation may or may not affect youth and what is affecting youth right now. We have a piece by Iris Sangiovanni, my co-host.
Yes. So I just did an interview with Susan Fennerin, and she is a professor of social work and women and gender studies.
Here at USM.
Here at USM, yes.
And you did.
And we spoke about bullying and sexual harassment and in regards to the LGBTQ plus youth.
Hi, my name is Susan Fennerin. I'm the director of the School of Social Work at the University of Southern Maine, and I'm also a professor here, and I'm also a professor in the Women and Gender Studies program. So that I do mostly research on peer sexual harassment and bullying that occurs in junior high and high schools between students.
And can you give some examples of what, you know, kinds of behavior constitutes as bullying or sexual harassment?
Sure. Bullying behaviors tend to be a little bit more benign, but not less hurtful. It's more things like, you know, being punched, maybe being yelled at, having words yelled at you that, you know, like, oh, maybe you're fat or you're, I don't know, ugly, some words like that. Sexual harassment tends to be a little bit more, around a person's, being or how they think of themselves in terms of for girls, a lot of times it's words like slut or things that carry a lot of hurt to it. For LGBT kids, obviously, you know, any kind of words, you know, depicting their sexual orientation is going to be hurtful to them.
And Why do you think people bully LGBT plus people?
I think the bullying of LGBT folks actually falls also under just being considered other. So that if you have a disability, if you're LGBT, if you anybody who's different, who doesn't just sort of fall under a standard female or male way of being, or anybody who just doesn't sort of fit whatever the culture's norm is, I think is really put in a very precarious position of being harassed in some way. And it's more about being different than it is being particular to LGBT kids. But I think LGBT kids are singled out. I mean, a lot of the research that I showed is that LGBT kids do experience more sexual harassment than straight hetero kids. Lesbian girls actually get the most abuse just from the studies that I've done. So there's even a little bit of a hierarchy in there, but as far as anybody who is different, and so therefore, if you're gay, you're different, and if you're trans, you're different, if you're disabled, you're different. So that all of those being different opens up opportunities for people to harass you, and I think that for LGBT kids, that is a huge risk factor in our schools, and it causes them to feel more unsafe than how kids might usually feel in school, so that our schools do not do a good job of protecting LGBT kids. I don't think they do a particularly good job with disability, kids with disabilities, kids from different races or ethnicities. A lot of schools, if the norm happens to be white and heterosexual, I think it's an open opportunity for students to experience discrimination. A lot of this prevents students from achieving an equal education, which means that if you're sitting next to somebody who's calling you a horrible name every 5 minutes and kicking your chair and throwing stuff at you, pencils or spitballs, whatever kids might be doing, that's distracting you from getting an education. And this also depends on how teachers and administrators treat the children in schools. But one of the first steps is for teachers and administrators to realize that school climate is really sits on their shoulders in order to allow children to be able to learn how to create a safe environment between each other. And then also have the standards held up by the adults. A lot of adults don't recognize sexual harassment and bullying that goes on, and that hurts kids. And I do want to just say, a lot of the bullying is not bullying, it's actually sexual harassment. So that even though a number of schools have bullying prevention programs, the bullying prevention programs don't always get at behaviors like sexual harassment, the cyberbullying that goes on in Facebook or on the internet, and the harassment that goes on outside of school and then is brought back inside school and then is mislabeled as bullying. A lot of it is actually sexual harassment, and for even though some states like Maine have passed bullying laws, sexual harassment laws have been on the books and are federal laws. Bullying laws are state laws. If you're being sexually harassed, you have the federal government behind you.
All right. So again, that was a piece by my co-host, Iris Sangiovanni, interviewing Susan Finneran from USM's Women and Gender Studies program group. You're listening to the Blunt Youth Radio Project. I'm Olivia Bradstreet.
And I'm Iris Sangiovanni.
And we're with our guests, Sarah Osgood and Megan Brody. Tonight we're discussing LGBTQ plus issues. Our number is 780-4909. That's 780-4909. And we'd like for you to give us a call. This is a call-in show. We want to hear what you think about these topics. Now, I'd like to just jump right into a discussion on that piece. You know, a lot of some things Susan was saying, you know, didn't really talk about the dismantling the idea of the arbitrary normal person. And I wondered if anyone else picked up on that.
For me, it's just like everyone is different. And like for me, that it's like, in that way, sometimes I feel like, you know, what, you know, like everyone is different. Like, so like, how can there sort of be sort of such like definitive identities? Like, I just feel like I'm just a person. Like, I mean, I don't know. That's how I feel about, you know, about it. But, anyways, Megan, you know, what were your thoughts on, the piece? And
I think you did a great job with the interview, Iris. And I think that sort of at the core of a lot of the questions that you are asking is sort of this idea that we tend to map sex, gender, and sexuality in very specific mm-hmm. combinations onto really specific bodies, and it's not useful mm-hmm. at all, really, that your sex is different from your gender, which has nothing to do at all with your sexuality. Mm-hmm. And if you look at them as discrete entities, you understand that there are myriad possibilities mm-hmm. and that really, like, what's the likelihood that there's a normal in there somewhere? There are so many different combinations, but, you know, I think that we're sort of socially conditioned to think, well, you know, if you have certain equipment, you will behave this way and you will identify this way. Well, what if you are biologically female, you don't identify as a woman as you're expected to, and your sexuality is neither heterosexual nor homosexual? It is something entirely different. We don't have ways of talking about that, but we sure do have a lot of folks targeting anybody who sort of breaches the expectations of sex, gender, and sexuality. And it's sad. Mm-hmm. It's really sad. And I think that that's where groups like yours come in handy, where you have Outright and you have organizations and classes and radio shows like this that are willing to tackle it.
Now, Sarah, do you have to, you know, I imagine you would have to deal with youth talking about some of their experiences with being bullied because of, you know, simply existing. And I wonder what your thoughts were on that piece.
Yeah, in listening to the piece, it made me think about how in the work that I do with young people, I am also trying to dismantle this idea between bullies and folks who are bullied. Mm-hmm. I once had an experience working with a young person a few years back who came out to a group of young folks that I was working with as a former mm-hmm. bully. And that was really, really powerful for me, that this young person was able to articulate the sadness and upset that they had felt in their life and how that had turned them into a bully, and that it was something that they had never wanted to do again, and that they had this emotional awareness and had done the work to become not a bully. And so I think about in the work that I do kind of really pushing emotional development and like sense of self, and I feel like that is specific to LGBTQ youth, and really pushing a positive self of one's identities, one's body, one's experiences. But that is in general for everybody in the world should be continuing to work on feeling better as themselves. And I think, you know, maybe I'm an optimist, but I think that there would be less bullies if it was like implemented in schools to do mm-hmm. emotional development and for people to be learning how to feel better about themselves.
And I think also that families look different. You know, marriage is great in terms of marriage equality, but not if we try to fit everybody into one static family structure. Mm-hmm. Families look really different, and no one should be ashamed that their family structure doesn't meet someone else's expectations of it.
Mm-hmm. And I think that goes for the queer community, but also, like, you know,
absolutely.
Yeah, it's, there's many shapes, sizes, you know, like all sorts of forms, and yeah.
I think the main thing is to get people to, you know, who are not part of that community to recognize that, and even people within the community, like the LGBT community, to, you know, be accepting of one another and realize the things that they're doing that are problematic. And this has been Blunt Youth Radio. We've been discussing LGBTQIA issues and more. My name is Olivia Bradstreet.
And I'm Ara San Giovanni. And
next week, we will be talking
about Portland, underground Portland.
Thank you for listening. Next is jazz.
Hello? I'm not afraid of the dark.